ॐ जननीं शारदां देवीं रामकृष्णं जगद्गुरुं पादपद्मे तयोः श्रित्वा प्रणमामि मुहुर्मुहुः। ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै। ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः हरिः। ॐ
ॐ मे ब्रह्मन् प्रोटेक्ट अस बोथ। May Brahman bestow upon us both the fruit of knowledge. May we both obtain the energy to acquire knowledge. May what we both study reveal the truth. May we cherish no ill feeling toward each other. Om, peace, peace, peace be unto all.
We have started the sixth section of the second chapter of the Taittiriya Upanishad, called Brahmanandavalli. And this sixth section outlines why at all should we believe that God exists. Because the answer given by the Upanishad is Brahman is the source of everything. He is the creator, he is the sustainer, and he is also the absorber. Not only that, Brahman has not created this universe. Just like a potter creates a pot. What is the problem with the potter and pot? Potter is separate, pot is separate, the instrument called potter's wheel is separate, everything is separate. Not only that, every pot he makes, provided he makes many pots, every pot is different from every other pot. Not only that, a potter himself is an individual. He is different from everything else. Not only that, not only he is different from everyone else, he is also different in himself. And he is continuously changing himself. A few cells, fetus, child, adolescent, youth, middle-aged person, old person, dead person. So, who is he? This is our experience of every single object in this world. The doubt comes, and very important points we are going to discuss in this section. So, the doubt comes. Who is God? Say, let us say he is a creator. Is he an idiot? Is he an evil person? Because we see so many idiots, fools, wise people, good people, evil people, and in every degree of difference we can imagine. So then, how could a God create such kind of people? Because a good person, in our experience, always does what is good. An evil person does what is evil. We see so much of evil, so much of suffering. So, some of these doubts, in fact, these are the doubts which keep us completely, what is called, even when we are professing that we believe in God, these doubts are realities for us, and we cannot but behave according to our conviction. We do not behave, our life is not lived according to what we profess, but according to what we are really convinced of. If we really believe in God, our life will be totally different. If we believe in the world, then our life will be totally different. Not what we profess, but our life shows what we really are convinced of. Not only that, I am good, why am I to suffer? Someone is evil, why is that person, of course according to my view, is enjoying this world? So we see so many questions arise. But the strangest thing is, to whom do these questions really arise? When Brahma requested Bhagavan Buddha, soon after his realization that you go on preaching what you have experienced. Buddha said that who is going to listen to my sermons? Then Brahma replied, there are three sorts of people. One sort of persons, they are so totally immersed in worldliness, they do not even want to know what you, your life, your about yourself, what you teach. There are a few people who know the truth, they do not require your teaching. But there are a few people struggling sincerely who require your guidance, and your life should be dedicated to help such people only. When we come to Swami Vivekananda, Swamiji's view is totally different. He is not saying that there are some people who are struggling to know God, my mission in life is to help them. No, everyone is potentially divine. So if somebody is poor, whether he believes in God or not, whether he is good or evil, that's none of my concern. But I must help to the best of my ability, because this is called Brahma Drishti. There is no non-believer, evil person, good person, happy person, unhappy person in this world. According to Brahma Drishti, there is no birth, there is no death. Everything is Brahman. And Brahman is not one who is born and who is going to die. Brahman is not limited by time, space and causation. Therefore, if everybody is Brahman, there is only Brahman. So, everyone is Brahman. Everything is Brahman. Everything is God. God is everything. But most people do not know about it. Let me help. What they do with the teaching, that is their lookout, not mine. This is the teaching given by Swami Vivekananda expounding. I think this is the teaching and this is the view of every God-realized soul in this world. So now, in our last class, I briefly mentioned, does God exist? Only I am using the word God, but the Upanishad, Taittiriya Upanishad, all Upanishads use the word Brahman. Brahman asti va nasti. Is Brahman existent or not? For that, seven reasons are given. But before that, I would like to very briefly dwell upon what Christianity has thought about it. There was a great saint. His name was Saint Thomas Aquinas. And he gave five proofs for God's existence. So first, let us very briefly think about it. First, argument from motion. Anything that is in motion must have been moved by something else. This chain of movers cannot go back infinitely. So there must be a first mover that is itself unmoved. Aquinas identifies this first mover as God. Very brief explanation. You take the example of a heavy stone. If anyone finds this stone moving, then a stone by itself doesn't move. Someone must have been making it move. And to move something else which is motionless, that person or that object, maybe an animal, doesn't matter, maybe strong wind, that has to move. So who is moving? The mover of the stone. And so you go on tracing back. Ultimately, there must be somebody who is an unmoved mover, causeless cause. So that must be God. This is the first proof from our experience that God exists. Second, causality. There cannot be an effect without a cause. Karana, karya, sambandha. You see a baby, you can't think baby has fallen from sky. He must have been born of parents. And who gave birth to the parents? Their parents, their parents. So if we go back and back and back, ultimately we end up in one being who is now never born, but from whom everything has come out. So that uncaused cause also philosophy is called first cause. Don't go on asking who caused God. Then he will become an effect. So this becomes what is called argument in circular and ad infinitum. That is not allowed. So the first uncaused cause of everything, this is called argument from causality, is a proof that God exists. Third argument is from contingency. That is to say, whatever exists here, so it could not have existed. That philosophical language, they call it contingent. If everything were contingent, it would have been impossible for nothing to have ever existed. So nothing can exist if there were no contingency. Since something now exists, there must be a being that exists out of necessity, but he who is the source of all other existence, there must be one, and that is the causeless cause, the first contingent, without being influenced by any other being. It is almost same argument. That is the third argument. Fourth argument, from degrees of perfection. When we look at it, there are strong people, weak people, there are degrees of strength, degrees of purity, degrees of happiness, degrees of greatness, degrees of intelligence, degrees of beauty. Everything that we observe have degrees. There are infinite number of mango fruits, and all fruits are not of the same quality. Some are meant for pickling, some are meant for some other purpose, some are meant for consuming, and some not for eating, but for sucking. That's why we are suckers. So, we see everything is different. And this is what in Vedanta, if you recollect, the idea of difference. Three differences. Two different species of trees, both are different. One is a mango, another is an apple. And the same, then two trees, mango trees, but there is enormous difference. One is sweet, another is sour, one is small, another is big, etc. Then within the same tree, there are roots, there are trunk, branches, small branches, big branches, blossoms, then there are small fruits, rotten fruits, half-ripe fruits, ripe fruits. That is called Swagata Veda, Vijatiya Veda, Sajatiya Veda, Swagata Veda. And Brahman, being one, without beginning, infinite, he is free from all these three differences. That is what Aquinas wants to tell us. So, we see some things are more perfect, good or noble than others. This comparison requires a standard of absolute perfection. Most marvelous argument. How do we judge a thing? This person singing is better than the other person singing. That means we must have a measurement. Actually, the eighth anuvaka, we are going to get into it soon. That is called Ananda Mimamsa. Various types of happinesses, higher and higher and still highest degree of happiness, Brahmalokananda, Satyalokananda, Hiranyagarbhananda, this comparison comes. But before we can compare, we must have a standard, a measurement. So they have taken, suppose there is a human being, young, energetic, idealistic, highly intelligent, very capable, asishtaha, dradishtaha, balishtaha, yuva asyad, sadhu, very good person, extremely good person, goodness personified. And with all these external and internal qualities, he is the prince, he is the king of this entire universe. And he is capable of enjoying. So, if he enjoys this world, having all this kind of body, this kind of mind, this kind of aesthetic sense, this kind of moral sense, this kind of intellect, and highly devoted to spiritual life, how much joy he must be deriving being the ruler of this entire universe, that is one measure, and taking that one measure, then the Upanishad goes on comparing those who are in a higher world. Karmadeva, for example, Ajana Jana Deva, Gandharvas, Indra, Brihaspati, Prajapati, and finally Hiranyagarbha. So 10 comparisons are given, and every higher being living in a higher world means higher happiness. 2 zeros, Teyesatam Manusha Anandaha. So 100 times, 100 is not a fixed 100 number as we understand, billions of times, but 100 is also a measurement. That is why everything is measured in hundreds only, so far as we are concerned. So, that is the measurement that is required. And then, I am forestalling what we are going to study there. But very briefly, suppose there is a person on earth. He is not a ruler. He is a very ordinary person. But he is a Kshatriya. He knows the essence of the Vedas. He knows Brahma Satyam Jagan Mithya. And Avrijinaha, deliberately, consciously, he never does any harm to anybody. He cannot even think of doing any harm, let alone doing it. And whole life, completely a pure life. So, this is called Avrijinaha Apapa Hataha. This is the second qualification. And there is a third qualification, which is the most marvelous qualification. What is that? Akama Hataha. Such a person is an emperor who conquered every desire. A desire, even a thought of a desire, never arises in that person. In other words, he is a man of dispassion, is an embodiment of dispassion. Vairagyavan. So this person need not go anywhere. And then this is the beautiful argument that the Upanishad gives. This very Taittiriya Upanishad gives. You have to listen very carefully. This person, having these three qualifications, he knows the essence of the scriptures, he leads the purest of pure life, and he has got complete vairagyam. That is the only word. He is not attached to anything. He doesn't never thinks that I lack anything. He is completely dispassionate. And all the Daivi Sampat is, as it were, compressed in that one word, Vairagyavan Purushaha. He is not like a stone. And such a person, he enjoys what the emperor of this world, having a youthful body, very strong, physically, mentally, his willpower is great, his intellect is great, his life is pure, and whatever, Manusha Ananda, human happiness, one measure of human happiness, this person enjoys, even if he is living under the shade of a tree, or even without a shade of a tree. And then, the higher loka means higher Ananda, higher Ananda means greater Vairagya. This is what you will have to understand. Higher world is higher happiness. Higher happiness, the greater the Vairagya, the greater is the experience of happiness. Here Vairagya is equated with higher happiness. So the happiness that one derives from a higher being, beginning from the outside, what is called Bhuvaha, what is called Suvaha, are the 7 lokas. According to Hinduism, Bhuloka, and then upper 6 lokas, finally culminating in Brahmaloka, Satyaloka. All that happiness, Hiranyagarbha's happiness, this person is getting only because he has got Vairagyam. We will discuss, this is just to give a foretaste at what is going to come. So we see that in this world, we see that there are degrees of perfection, degrees of goodness, degrees of charity, degrees of nobility, and also the opposite. We see that one. So we require some measurement. How do we know? This is a good musician, not bad. This is an excellent musician, and this is a maestro. How do we know? Because we must have a standard, and that standard is always perfection. The standard by which we measure must be always perfection. That is why the number 100. What is the interest I am getting? 100%. What is the joy I am getting? 100%. What would be the joy I will get in higher world? 100% more than what you are getting, etc., etc. We must have an idea of perfection, and that being in whom or who is the source of all this goodness, all this perfection, he is called God. Remember, this is the fourth argument by Saint Aquinas. And the fifth argument from design. Supposing you are seeing a beautiful table or a beautiful painting, a beautiful house, you have an idea, oh, that house, I have seen many houses, and no house can be compared to this house. This is superb. So that is called design. So the house doesn't fall from the sky. Somebody had thought about it, measured it, drawn it, and saw that it is built according to that design. So everything in this world, the design doesn't mean only the physical dimensions. That which is beautiful, that is a design. That which is the most fragrant something, that is also a design. The softest something, that is also design. And the tastiest dish, that is also a design. And that particular season, when it is perfect, what is perfect? When we forget our body, that is called perfection. It doesn't remind, oh, it is cold. That means we are reminded of our body. Oh, it is hot. We are reminded of our body. Oh, this is not tasty. We are reminded of our body. But that which makes us forget our body, that is called perfection. And when we look at some objects, we find that the nearest to that, our concept of perfection, that is called design. So in this world, a few rare things are there which are perfect. Not 100%, but so if we see that, then there must be some being, intelligent being, thinking being, designing being, who designs, who fashions this design, because nothing falls from the sky. So that is the last reason. So arguments, what is the first argument from motion, argument from causality, argument from contingency, argument from degrees of perfection, and argument from design. And therefore, there must be a God, that being from whom all these things emanate, he is called God. Now, I'm just, as a comparative way, all great people come to the same conclusions. As they say, all great people think alike, and all fools also think alike. So now coming back to our Upanishad, Taittiriya Upanishad, Brahmanandavalli, 6th section, Anuvaka, gives 7 powerful reasons. First, I will just recollect what we already discussed about. First, Brahman exists as the intelligent cause. So if you see a beautiful table, so there must be a carpenter. That is called an intelligent cause. Because the table or a pot doesn't make by itself. It must be made by somebody. And that particular shape, etc., that comes because of some intelligence. And that intelligence is called Nimitta Karanam. So that is the first argument. Second argument, because I exist. Nobody says, I do not exist. Because, funny argument, if I say I do not exist, even to say I do not exist, I have to exist. So that existence, a pot exists, a tree exists, a mountain exists, a mosquito exists, a mouse exists, anything that is in existence, can only be experienced by an existent conscious being. So we are all the time experiencing existence. And Vedanta tells, Brahman is the existence. That means, whatever we are experiencing is nothing other than Brahman. Therefore, whenever we experience existence, and I am a Jivatma, individual soul, and I exist, if I exist, that means God exists. So, what is God? A collection existence of the entire universe is called Brahman. So, I, the Jivatma, individual soul, am the proof that Brahman exists. This is the second argument. Third argument, so even when a potter makes a pot, he doesn't take away some of his flesh and makes a pot. Something other than himself. In this example, some clay. Or if he is a goldsmith, gold. If he is a carpenter, wood, etc. This is called material cause. And we see in this world, every living creature is a mixture of both material and intelligent causes. And so, wherever there is a living conscious being, then there is existence. What about objects which do not have intelligence? That is to say, jada padartha, and what is called non-conscious objects. A piece of stone, a clod of earth, etc. Vedanta tells, Brahman is satyam, jnanam, anantam. Wherever there is sat, there is jnanam, chit. Wherever there is chit, there is anandam or anantam. Because to see the infinite existence, piecewise, created by our mind, divided by our mind, and see only a small bit of it, that is called maya. So, when we look at anything, since it exists, Brahman must exist. Fourth argument, according to Taittiriya Upanishad, Brahman is Sukrutam. So, this is also Saint Aquinas' argument also. There must be an uncaused cause. Otherwise, the argument goes on ad infinitum. Who created God? If you anybody cleverly asks such a question, suppose you say, A created God. Then the next question is followed. Who created A? B created. Who created B? There would be no final answer. That is why that which is the ultimate answer, that is called God. So, that is called Sukrutam. Sukrutam means Swayam Krutam. Swayam Krutam means eternally self-existent. That is called Sukrutam. Usually the Sanskrit word Sukrutam means a good action. But here, Shankaracharya gives the beautiful explanation, Swayam Krutam, self-creator. Self-creator means what? That which is finally, eternally existent. No one created it. It is eternally existing. That is why eternally existing. Anything that is created was not there at some point of time, will not be there after some point of time. Only in between, before and after, we see the existence. That is what Bhagavan Krishna also tells. Avyakta adini bhutani vyakta madhyani bharata. Avyakta nidhanani eva tatraka paridevana. All of us came from the unmanifest, became manifest, remain manifest for some time, and again go back into that unmanifest, just like from the ocean. By the force of nature, the water becomes vapor, is carried by the wind, and it becomes water again. It is poured, which we call rain, and again it flows back, but meanwhile, it serves to sustain the entire creation. So, the fourth argument is Sukrutam, causeless cause. Fifth argument is Brahman, Raso Vaisaha, Adi Rasa. You observe, every creature in this world is only seeking Ananda, not even existence. If I am convinced that I can live forever, but I won't be a happy person, I will be a suffering person. I would not like to exist. That is why so many people commit suicide. So this is the fifth argument. Every creature, what is the commonality, common characteristic between everything? That is what Swami Vivekananda tells. I do not remember his exact words. But it says, every atom wants to go back from where it came. Why is the atom moving at mind-boggling speed? It wants to go to that source, which is motionlessness, which is unmoving. It wants to go back. Why am I moving? I don't want to move. I want to remain unmoved, immobile. And that is called freedom. What is freedom? To be oneself is a freedom. Just like when you are walking and you are about to fall down, automatically your auto balance kicks in. You try to prevent it, and that is what happens here also. So we want to go back to that source, which is Ananda, Brahmananda. We came from Brahmananda. We live because of Ananda, and we want to go back. We do not want drops of Ananda. We want infinite Ananda. Infinite Ananda is that which transcends time, space, causation. That means object. Time, space and object. So this is the fifth argument. Raso vaisaha is the source. Brahman is the source of all joy. How do we know? Because of our individual experience. This is the fifth argument for the existence of Brahman. Sixth argument. Brahman is the enlivening principle. Kohye vanyat kah pranyat. Who can live even for a millisecond? Millisecond. If that pranadevata, that Brahman in the form of pranadevata is not sustaining us, so who would like to live? This is the sixth argument. The very desire to be living, to become existence, is because the source from which we came is the infinite that ever existed, ever will exist. That is the sixth argument, enlivening principle. Who is that? God. And the seventh argument, a bit funny, light-sided argument. In this world we see, everybody says, I am afraid. I am frightened of something. So I don't want to be frightened. But what is called fearlessness is important, no doubt. But fear also is one of the very principles of our joy. I will very briefly explain, and then we can go into the second itself. Supposing government says, I am employing you, and you come when you like, do what you like, do however small or big, little or more you want to do, but you will get your salary. And let foreign countries occupy weaker countries. Let strong men enslave weak men. Let wicked people, let them go on harassing good people, but weak people. So there is always fear in this world. Maybe this is my last breath. Maybe I may not get this happiness I am deriving now. This unconscious fear is always there. Now I am happy, but I know unconsciously it won't last long. But I don't want it to disappear. I want it all the time. So there is fear. As I mentioned many times earlier, so if I have something, I have fear of losing it. And if I am expecting something, I am frightened I may not get it. That is why asha pratiksha. Pratiksha means I have legitimate reasons to expect something, but I may not get it. Asha means I am hoping against hope that I will get, I want to get something. I have not done anything to deserve it, but however, I want to. Every person who buys a lottery ticket, he knows it. I don't deserve it because I am paying only 1 rupee, but I want to win 1 lakh of rupees. So you see, yeah, we all fall under that. So both fear and fearlessness are proofs that God exists. For that, Upanishad, how does it want to prove that fear is one definite proof that God exists? Bhishasmat vatah pavate bhishodeti suryaha bhishat agnischa indrascha mrutyu dhavate panchamam bhishasmat. Even death does its duty of killing. Hinduism doesn't call it killing. It calls giving, taking away the old dress and giving a new dress appropriate to what a person had done. This is the duty of the Mrutya Devata, death. Death is a Devata. So the sun and the fire and the air, so all these things, Bhisho Deti, Bhishat, Suryaha Udeti, the sun rises because of the fear. Because Shashvati Bhya Samabhyaha, in Isavasya Upanishad tells that the Lord allotted for eternity to some of these devatas their respective duties, and he is supervising whether these devatas are about to do their daily duties, attending the office and discharging their duties or not. And then if anybody thinks nobody is there to supervise me, I can do whatever I like. But Vedanta poses even more threatening principle called karma phala. Whether it is the sun, whether it is the moon, 24 hours, God implanted a CCTV within every living creature and commanded you record and you reward. And the whole creation is created as a combination of three gunas. That is why Sri Ramakrishna gives the example that there are what we call, a farmer wants to buy some oxen for ploughing the field. So he goes to the market where he can buy some oxen. And they know that a touch it seems, because I am not experienced in it, so the oxen is lying, chewing cud or whatever, and the one fellow goes and it is a good looking bull and he touches the tail, and the bull placidly looks around, goes on chewing the cud and doesn't react at all, as if this person did not touch it at all. And there are some, the moment somebody comes, it stops chewing the cud, looks at this person. What is this person going to do? The moment the touch is felt at its tail, it jumps up and faces the man. Then the farmers know, this is a very useful bull. This will do really the job. The others are fit only for butcher's shop. So, even animals, dogs, ferocious dogs are there. Alsatians are there. Rottweilers are there. So, there are some. The bread, the Western countries, we have to appreciate. Every day their minds are looking, how can I improve this? How can I mold what I want to do? That is why Swami Vivekananda said, sit humbly at the feet of this Western culture and learn the good things from them. Not religion, not philosophy, but science. Whereas in India, even today, one single AI which is effective is not working. These fellows are eating crores of rupees given by the government or collected from others, because we are not oriented to produce results. We are oriented only to dream and cheat other people. Of course, there are very good people who are trying. Our whole orientation is totally different. That is what Swami Vivekananda pointed out. Don't find fault with me. These are the words of Swamiji. Go and sit. But when they want to come and learn what is true religion, what is real nature of God, and what is the goal of life, then come here and sit humbly at the feet of even an ordinary person can teach you what your theology, your scriptures can never reveal to you. So, we have to learn from good people. Anyway, what is the subject that we are talking? These are the 7 proofs that God does exist. But another point is there. In today's class, I will point out. Supposing somebody says, I do not believe in the existence of Brahman. So that comes now in the 6th, this one only. So Brahman doesn't exist. And Shankaracharya has given the most marvelous explanation. And here we have to be very careful. When somebody says, I believe in God, we have to take it with a big grain of salt. Kilos and kilos of grain of salt. Millions of Hindus say, we believe in God. Look at their lives. Wretched, dishonest, untrustworthy type of life. We are talking about, the Upanishad is talking about, a sincere belief in God. And to illustrate this point, we have already seen a story in the Katha Upanishad. Nachiketa's father has this kind of Hindu belief. I want to go to heaven. If really believed in heaven, that is, if somebody believed, if I go to the next village, there are plenty of jobs available, and one particular job can give me crores of rupees. I can become a crorepati. He says, I believe in it. But he never moves from his village, wretched village. Whereas another person, as soon as he hears, he jumps up, starts running towards the other village, and seeks. Nachiketa was such a person. He truly believed in it. That's why he did not care even to give up his death, because he was not a fool. He was not an uneducated person. He studied scriptures according to the ordinance. He was a Brahmana, son of a Brahmana. Whereas his father, while professing I want to go to heaven, he never did anything that would make him even turn towards heaven. This person, as he heard, he pointed out to his father, you are professing something and you are doing the opposite of it. But I believe, and then I am going to go to God. And he did not fear even death. So when somebody says, I believe in God, according to Shankaracharya, what is he telling us? That person, he becomes a spiritual person. His whole life is transformed. So he becomes truly a spiritual aspirant. That is the effect of belief, and that is the only measurement, only way to measure whether what this person says that I believe in God is true or not. And look at the other person. Even though he says, Tirupati laddus nowadays are made out of palm oil, they are trying to cheat God also. And God must be laughing. You person, you don't know what karma phala you are going to get. I can see clearly that you will be floating in palm oil for the next few years. Anyway, I am just pulling, making some fun. So these are the 7 beautiful reasons. We will discuss about them in a little more detail. But anybody could understand these wonderful arguments, how Brahman exists. And if Brahman exists, he should be the goal of our life. That is the subject matter which we will discuss in our next class. Om Jananim Sharadam Devim Ramakrishnam Jagatgurum Padapadme Tayohu Sritva Pranamame Mohur Mohoho. May Sri Ramakrishna, Holy Mother, and Swami Vivekananda bless us all with bhakti. Jai Ramakrishna.